Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Tuesday, October 31st. And if it's Halloween, I think you know how what that means. If it's Halloween on our show, we're going to be chatting in a minute here with Leslie Eastman. And Leslie, we'll go back and forth on a couple of political things, but we're going to spend most of the day today talking to her very special guest, Dr. Martin Fricke. I think I'm pronouncing that name correctly. I'm sure that Leslie will correct me if I'm not. But he has a very interesting book that we're going to share with you today. Let me say happy Halloween and good morning to our friend Leslie. How are you, Leslie?
Good morning. Happy Halloween, Sylvia. Delighted to join you. Obviously, looking at another slow news week. So
that's it.
Glad we're
They're
able to liven it up for your audience with a discussion of something fun for everybody.
Great. Well, I know you'll make it. I know you'll make it a lot of fun. Now, you have a wonderful post, and I got to ask you to say it, because you have a wonderful post saying that Halloween is not a holiday; it's a lifestyle. Something
yes.
like that, I think you posted. Well, just take a minute and explain that, because I love it.
Oh, no, no. It's ever since I was a little girl, Halloween has always been my favorite holiday. As I'm fond of saying, it's like Christmas, but all the decorations, but none of the stress. And you know, everybody gets to be a little kid at heart. And, you know, I have a little sad news this year. My son, he's now a very much a grown young man of 16 years. First year, he's not wearing a Halloween costume, so I'm feeling a little nostalgic here. But, you know, it's just a great time of fun and people getting in touch with their, you know, what makes them tick, I think expressing themselves a little bit and getting some really delicious chocolate and tasty candies mm-hmm. on top of that. So just a real joyous, fun holiday before the stress and bustle of the real holiday season starts taking root next month.
That's right. No, you're exactly right. And we've done several shows with you about Halloween, and they've always been a lot of fun just to hear in your voice how much you enjoy Halloween. Well, we have a special guest today, Leslie. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Dr. Is it Fricke? Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Dr. Martin Fricke of San Diego.
Oh, Fricke. Okay,
I'm sorry. It takes me a while to explain this because he's just
all
like
right, well,
the
he's
nicest,
listening.
Smartest
he's listening
man.
To you. No, I'm saying he's listening to your presentation, so take it away.
I'll
good
introduce
at presentations.
You, Martin, and
all
put
right.
everybody in context.
Yes,
as
please.
Listeners have known, I have been a citizen activist since 2009, and early in the process of me getting involved in the local politics and policies, climate change and global warming was at the forefront of what we were trying to deal with in California. So I get this invitation through the SoCal Tea Party, SoCal Tax Revolt Coalition, a Tea Party group that we formed. And it's Dr. Martin Fricke of San Diego, nuclear physicist and senior fellow of the American Physical Society, inviting a reporter or somebody to cover a talk they were having with several leading scientists men who turned out to be good friends to both my group and myself, Roger Cohen and Will Happer, and they were presenting information on global warming and why the models of prediction weren't going to work, and it was a very high-level technical talk. Well, I was able to attend because I have at least some science degree, so I was able to translate their very sophisticated chat into information that was meaningful to a more general audience. And from their place forward, I've been friends with Dr. Roger Cohen and Dr. Martin Fricke and Will Happer, and they have been very supportive of all my global warming / climate change punditry. Now, I've gotten to know them personally, and one of the things I wanted to do is feature a book that Martin's just written, taking his physics in a whole new direction. So, Martin, why don't you say hi to our audience and tell us a little bit about your new book, Soviet Science Spies.
All right. Well, happy Halloween back at you both. And the book I wrote is called Soviet Science Spies, and it's basically about a renowned physicist that is contracted by the Central Intelligence Agency to try to thwart the Soviets' efforts to produce a certain kind of hydrogen weapon, thermonuclear weapon. And he gets caught up in a whole bunch of violent situations with the Soviets, also with the dictatorship of Nikolai Kosciuszko, Kosciuszko, I think it's pronounced, and has to wiggle his way out of those. It takes place, of course, in Moscow and in Bucharest, Romania, and a bunch of other places, Rome, Paris, Italy, in the United States, in Washington, D.C., and La Jolla, California, and Oak Ridge, Tennessee, where the Oak Ridge National Laboratory is, and some other places I've been. And the story has a science background story, backstory, but it's only to connect the events in the story, like physicist goes to a conference and gets waylaid or something. All the physics itself is relegated to, two appendices, so anybody interested in that can read in the appendices, but it's not up in the story, so you don't have to know how to spell physics to read the story. Could I put in a promo here?
Yes, please.
Yes, no, this is
Martin,
this show is your promo, so yes,
please
right. Feel free.
That's the idea of the show. I mean, you can use the podcast to promote the book, directly or indirectly. So we're very happy to do that. Can I ask you a very simple question? You got me interested on something. I got to ask you real quick before I forget. If this is a spy novel, is there a pretty girl in the movie? I mean, in the story, is there like I mean, I can't think of the girl's name right now,
okay.
But Ursula Anders, I think.
I'm going to answer Sylvia honestly. There's not one pretty girl. There's not two pretty girls. There, by my count, at least three of them and several other, cameos by others. Yes, there's a whole harem
of
beauties.
Super.
In this
now
book.
You're giving me a reason to read the book. I was going to read it anyway, but now I have an urgency to read it. Okay. Just had to get that in, Martin. Sorry about that.
There's quite a bit of erotica here and there, but it's it doesn't go too far. It's a long way pornographic, but anyway.
That's fine.
the promo, yeah.
Please.
The book is called Soviet Science Spies, and it's presently a Kindle book on Amazon. To get it, you simply in the Amazon's main page where the big title bar is there. You just type in either Soviet Science Spies or type in my name, Martin, M-A-R-T-I-N, Frick, F-R-I-C-K-E, and it will take you to the book. I do hope to have a soft cover coming out before too long, but at the moment it's there as a kind book. And so that's the end of my commercial.
Okay.
Well, I found it while you were speaking. I was following your instructions. I did go to Kindle to Amazon, and there it is. So it's very easy to find. Easy to find it. So so it's there for anybody who wants to see it. But so anyway, back to Leslie, please.
Well, anyway, so this I wanted to, it's kind of a James Bondian homage here, and because you're a first-time author, and I really wanted to get your perspective about the process. What inspired you? What was the biggest challenge? And what was your process of actually self-publishing? Uh-huh. So let's start with the first thing. What was your inspiration behind actually sitting down and writing this story?
Well, as you know, I've published quite a few articles about physics in professional journals, and I'd never tried writing anything in the area of fiction at all. And I just wanted to see what it was like. And I had a few, was fortunate to have a few friends who are good fiction writers, and they gave me, they told me how to do it. And boy, is it different than the things that you and I, Leslie, published. The serious articles, totally different. The advice was, the last thing you want to do is make an outline of the book and then try to cook up stories that'll fit in the slots. What you want to do is whenever you get a thought that might be related to the general area of the book, you just, at midnight or whatever, you scribble it down, and or if you have an iPad or something, you punch it in, and you don't worry about anything, punctuation, spelling, or anything. And it's just to get the thought out. And then you go back, and, you think about where that might fit in the book, and then you read it, you rewrite it, you read it, you rewrite it ad nauseum until you get something that is halfway decent, and then you slot that in some place where it might fit in the book. And then you the other stories then kind of come naturally. I mean, you've written one, so you get thoughts about what might come before or after, and you write those up, and the book sort of evolves it on its own. And you never know what the ending. In fact, I was very curious about the ending until it ended. I had no idea where it was going. And so that is so different. Leslie, when you and I write serious stuff, well, all the thinking comes beforehand, and or most of it. And this way, it is just, the thoughts come, and they're not preceded by any thinking, really.
It's definitely a different process. I will say, I have to say that your book is definitely engaging and definitely takes physics in a whole new direction. But the one critique I would have is, though I love East Bloc countries, you know, I'm a big fan of the Balkan area, traveled through there, been to St. Petersburg myself, but there was no mention of Egypt. So you're going to have to do a follow-up book that takes you to Egypt for next year.
You better do that, Martin, no, because she's serious. If you want to come back on the show, you got to do at least a paragraph about Egypt somewhere there in your next 20 years. But can I ask you a question? Because this is a fascinating topic. As I said, I haven't had a chance to read the book, but the whole idea of a spy novel, and like Leslie was saying, in what used to be the Soviet bloc countries, it's fascinating. Because why did you go in that direction? I mean, there's spy novels. There could be spy novels of another. Why that particular territory? I'm curious about that.
Okay. I don't know what thought I had to begin with, but the one that started driving it was a thought about this physicist trying to thwart the Soviets from developing a so-called multiple independently targeted reentry vehicle, where the, you know, the way a thermonuclear bomb works is you have a primary, which is a fission bomb, and that explodes and drives the thermonuclear explosion. And one of the problems in creating a MIRV, they're called, is the size, like the diameter of the primary as well as its weight, in order to make it aerodynamically compatible with a MIRV warhead. And somehow that occurred to me at some point that that could kind of be the underlying backstory of the whole thing. Now, the backstory, by the way, is physics, but again, only as a means of connecting events, be they erotica or be they violent exchanges.
Now, let me ask you another question. The time frame, I think you mentioned the name of the leader in Russia or Soviet Union at that time. I think you said not Gromyko. Who did you say it was?
Nikolai.
The leader?
Ceausescu. It's Ceausescu.
Okay, Ceausescu. Okay, well, Ceausescu would have been Romania.
Yeah.
But never, Ceausescu would have been Romania. But what I'm trying to say, it sounds to me like your book is taking place in the early 1980s. Was Reagan in the White House?
Did that come up? Early 1960s.
Oh, okay, 60s. Okay, all right, 60s. Well, 60s would have been Gorbachev then. Okay, all right. Okay,
right.
I was just curious. I was trying to put the book in a time frame because there were many books written, many spy novels that were, well, not necessarily written about, well, there were some like James Bond, like Leslie mentioned, but that was a very popular topic, you know, spy novels having to do with the old Soviet Union. So that's what caught my attention when I read the little insert about the book, Martin.
Yeah, quite right. And, I didn't really come upon that time frame by thinking about other spy stories. It just, as I said, it kind of just wandered in there.
Yeah.
All by itself.
Yeah, you just caught my curiosity because I was originally born in Cuba, so that period of that time frame with the Cuban Missile Crisis and all of that is something that I have always had an interest in. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a little break, Martin, and then when we come back, we're going to do a whole segment with you and Leslie, okay? And then we can get into more of the book or even some of the other issues.
Right.
I think Leslie mentioned climate change is something of interest to you as well, right?
Yeah,
we'll hit
the current events and politics of the day. So
good. Well, let me take a break then.
Especially because we both live in crazy California, and there's always
exactly
news to be had.
So we'll fit that in. So what we'll do now, just we got through some of the general stuff. What I wanted to do now is take a break, and then when we come back, we'll do a whole 20 minutes on your book and the other issues that Leslie wants to bring up about climate change or crazy California, whatever it may be. So we're going to take a little break, and we'll be back with Leslie and Martin right after we hear from a couple of our sponsors here at Gawk Talk Radio. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. We've got a really neat program today with our friend Leslie Eastman. She always brings a wonderful guest to our show, and she's always our natural guest for Halloween. So let me give it back to Leslie. Take it away, Leslie. We got a whole segment.
Yeah, no, that's great. Now, because Martin and I are longtime, comrades in the battle for California here, I thought it might be fun to get Martin's thoughts on the current situation in California in terms of our election. So, Martin, let's talk about your take to begin with on the Senate race. Do you have any thoughts on who you're picking?
Well,
Dianne Feinstein or Kevin DeLeon? Are you leaving that particular one blank? And what do you think is going to happen in the end?
Well, that's your area of expertise, not mine. All I can say is, as an amateur in that area, it's my general impression is that the coastal areas of California are solidly left, and they have most of the population, which usually results in about a 75% congressional or votes for the House, and overwhelming the other parts of the state. And I haven't really seen anything in polls, although we know how reliable they are from the last election. That indicates much of a change coming up. Now, as regards both the Democrat candidate for governor and Dianne Feinstein, poll I saw over the weekend, I think it was Real Clear Politics, had each of them up by about 15 points. Now, pardon me, as far as Feinstein is concerned, that would seem to me to indicate that the whole Kavanaugh's hearing seems to perhaps have unfortunately invigorated the Democrat base as much as it has invigorated, use clean language, the conservative base, and
I hear what you're saying. I have a feeling, because what people need to understand is California has a jungle primary system whereby the two top candidates during the primary runoff, be it from different parties or the same party, get the general election slots. And that left two Democrats in California Senate race, Dianne Feinstein and Kevin DeLeon, who's a noted progressive activist and a general in the resistance. So while Dianne has got the lead, I think her lead has dropped off, actually, because I think a lot of Republicans or independents such as myself went for DeLeon or just not voting. So she's likely to win, but without enthusiasm. And I do have a good hope from a political analyst I follow. Apparently, the early numbers from red areas and Republicans in terms of ballots being turned in already are very solid for the Republicans and very weak for the Democrats.
By the way, Leslie, can I say something about that? Leslie, forgive me for interrupting you, because this morning I was listening to Hugh Hewitt, who has a radio show, and I usually catch him on the internet, usually the podcast. And he was interviewing a lady from California, one of the congresswomen who's running, I think in Anaheim, where Anaheim is, Orange County, I think that's called.
Yeah.
And she was saying, she was backing what you were just saying about turnout. She was saying that turnout has been extremely good in the red areas, like you said, and that's good news, because for the Democrats to take over the House, they have to flip a bunch of seats in California. And if they don't, it just gets more complicated, because they got to get 24 to flip the House. And if they don't pick up, maybe say three or four out there, that makes it hard. So I'm happy to hear that the early voting, Leslie, is going well. So I just wanted to put that in just a second, what you just said, Leslie.
Yeah, no, I have a little bit of hope that Cox might take the governorship, who is the Republican running a Trump-like campaign, especially if Trump himself remains so strong on immigration, which will bring out the redder turnout. I cannot make promises, but I do not think that California is going to contribute that many flipped House seats at the bottom line. So that may be the one thing California does give the rest of the country.
Well, if you could hold, if you can hold your position, basically keep those seats Republican in California, if you can just hold if you can hold the Republican seats, that would be a huge contribution. Even though, you know, Feinstein wins, and even though Newsom wins for governor, but if you can keep those Republican seats, that's going to really make a big difference on election night, Leslie.
Yeah. I will be very grateful if California doesn't screw it up for the rest of the country. How about you, Marvin?
Amen.
Leslie, let me ask you, please. You mentioned, both of you mentioned De Leon and Feinstein. And again, you know, I catch up with a lot of this from what you write at Legal Insurrection and what others of your colleagues there write at Legal Insurrection, and what I hear, because, you know, we're far away, it's kind of hard to tell what's going on. But I hear that a lot of Republicans are, in fact, voting for De Leon, because if the turnout is high, then a lot of them are probably going to vote for De Leon as a protest. Do you guys hear that?
I can speak to that. My husband and I did the very thing. That being said, a lot of our fellow Republicans / independent / conservatives think Feinstein, being so old, she won't serve out the full 6 years. And so theoretically, if Cox wins, he would appoint a Republican replacement. So that's the logic they're using to retain Feinstein on the ticket. And there's a whole slew of them who are just not voting for either one because they can't stomach it.
Right.
And I say to everybody, pick your poison. Just pick what you think is going to be best, then it'll work itself out in the end. But there's no way Feinstein didn't hurt herself by that stunt, and she'll be always remembered for how she behaved during the Kavanaugh hearings.
Yes, I agree. I agree with that. What about the and something else too about California, Leslie? I don't mean to jump on your agenda there.
No. Ask away, Silvio.
Okay, this is a real interest to me, because California is really developing a reputation in this area of climate change, as you know, and this is an area that you have expertise and Martin has expertise. So tell us a little bit about that. What is happening out there, and what is the local reaction to it, Leslie?
Well, I'm not exactly certain what you mean. We have we did the global warming, initiative back in 2006, and implemented a bunch of carbon credit rules, and those have been an epic failure. And Jerry Brown has been quick to herald all this really great activity, climate change, and press car makers to come up to speed with a variety of extravagant and technologically currently unachievable carbon emissions protocol based on, I say, questionable science. And it looks like Gavin Newsom is poised to continue on Jerry Brown's legacy, despite the fact Gavin Newsom perhaps has been two-faced about Brown's biggest legacy, which is the bullet train. So all I can say in terms of climate change is the insanity will continue unabated in California unless, by some miracle, Cox does actually take it. And even so, it's pretty much entrenched in the state culture, so we hope it doesn't pass to other states. Martin, how about your thoughts?
Well, first of all, yes, indeed. The scare tactics with regard to alarmism that the Earth is in any sort of near term, meaning hundreds of years, is going to face a crisis is totally incorrect. By the way, if you want something that isn't political, if you want science facts, there is nothing better than the website, which is as follows, CO2coalition.org. And Leslie and I belong to that. But that's a place where you can go get the from the very best people in the world, the scientific information. Now, overall, the problem is deeper than just climate science. The fact that the globalists in the United Nations, IPCC, and others have influenced to the degree they have other globalist leaders around the world to, well, the Paris Conference, thank God we got out of that, the, and things like that, is really atrocious. I mean, any time an ideology taints science, it becomes, it is no longer science by definition. Science is supposed to be immune from domination by political thought, but this has been terrible. It hurts people in all fields of science, mine and others. It just gives us all a bad name, it's just not good.
It's a travesty. And one of the things that has been hopeful, and not only did you see Trump rejecting the Paris Climate Accord, and we're not headed back. The EPA reports that carbon dioxide emissions have decreased, despite our withdrawal, and a lot of it has to do with new technologies such as those associated with fracking and natural gas usage that have naturally developed. So if there's a market for it, and the market will naturally achieve that, and most people who aren't, subsistence living will eventually gravitate to having a clean environment because people prefer to live in there.
Right.
And
sure.
I think what you're seeing actually throughout the entire world is this trend. They see Trump's success in fighting back on these globalist tendencies. You see the win of the Trump-like candidate in Brazil. You see that Germany's Angela Merkel has got to go into retirement. And so the stage is being set for, people who place their own country first but are willing to fight back on globalist assertions. And ultimately, I think that's going to be better for everybody. Finding localized solutions to problems, because not every problem is going to be the same in every single place in the world.
Right, exactly. And that is so true, Leslie. Let me ask, Leslie has heard this question before, but I don't usually have a chance to talk to somebody as well-informed as Martin on matters of science. When you hear something like this, this is a very common, not question, but a common topic that comes up about the environment. And they say, well, the North Pole is melting, and the South Pole is melting. Or you know what I mean. They talk about the poles melting. And that's because the temperatures are warmer or whatever. That, if we keep this up...
And then,
of course, they say if we keep this up, San Diego will be drowned out in 10 years. Yeah, whatever. So when you hear stuff like that, okay, to a lot of people, that's very scary, okay? And you were talking before about alarmism. What strikes you when you hear stuff like that?
Well, it one example that I... of the fallout of this alarmism that is important to me is that, most of the world's energy is still and will be for a while obtained through fossil fuel plants of one sort or another. And people among us, the poorest people among us, have the least amount of disposable income to pay for their essential energy demands, be it heating oil or just plain electricity or gasoline and so forth. And so these carbon taxes, in the first place, it's ridiculous to pick out carbon because carbon is not a pollutant. It's a life-giving atmospheric component that is vital to agriculture, and it is a good thing, not a bad. The more, the merrier. So they pick out, and then they impose this carbon tax based on the amount of carbon dioxide delivered to the atmosphere by these plants, and the penalties and fines, of course, are passed right on to the consumer. And these poor people who have the least to spend for their energy essentials, that's where it falls. I mean, they bear the brunt, percentage-wise, of these idiotic ideas. And that's always been painful to me, to see that the bureaucrats who do not understand that carbon dioxide is good, give me more, 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 put a tax on carbon dioxide, and the consequences fall to the poorest among us, and that's just not right.
Now, when you hear, let me get another question in quickly here. When you hear consensus, okay, the consensus is that. What does that mean when there's consensus among scientists? What does that mean, Martin?
It means that they've sent out polls, especially the more radical environmentalist groups and Greenpeace, whatever. And they ask questions like, is the Earth warming? And you can count me as replying yes on that. It's a tiny, tiny, tiny bit, but we're going through a solar cycle. And so it is, we're about at the peak of that, I would imagine. The next alarmism will be about, again, we'll go back and worry about an ice age. The I guess I've said enough about that.
So what you're saying is, I remember one time they said that 97% of the scientists agree on this. Well, it was 97% of the scientists who responded to the questionnaire.
Yeah.
Not 97% of all the scientists, right?
If you ask, and first of all, you can question, well, are these really scientists? Then, going beyond that, the kind of questions that are asked are things that people in the know would only seem to support, because generalities that are true. And so then they conclude, the problem is with the conclusion, they conclude that 97, 99, whatever, believe in disastrous climate change, and that's just not true. It's 97% or whatever may have replied in their poll questions to the way to a way that would seem to indicate that, but it's not true. There have been other studies of going back to these polls the first thing they found out was, well, they really weren't scientists. Other thing they found out was that all the scientists who were in there would probably answer pretty much the same. But the conclusion they drew is totally incorrect.
Yeah. Let me give it back to Leslie. We got about 5 minutes, Leslie, so let me give you a chance to follow up on some questions.
Well, actually, just one comment. I think this goes back to what I was saying, is that when you force a global solution on a local problem, what you're doing is diverting dollars and energies to solving the local problem, which has direct consequences. For example, the serious wildfires California has been experiencing, the result of people focusing so much attention on controlling carbon and preventing the clearing and lumbering of our forested areas, that we have a lot of dead plants and dead trees, millions of them, that now are basically kindling.
Yeah, they can't even get close enough to fight the fires.
Yes.
It's so dense.
So that we are beginning to see some, shall we say, less global approaches to the problems, I think is a very good sign. But unfortunately, I don't think our state is quite there yet on that kind of practical focus. In fact, I really, really resent both the fact that our soon-to-be Governor Newsom and Kamala Harris are more focused on probably trying to make a run for the presidency in the distant future than focusing on California's problems.
Yeah, it seems like every Democrat is running for president in 2020. I don't know how they're going to do the stage. I mean, they're going to have like six different debates to fit all of them on the stage. But, Martin, one quick question about the Paris Climate Change Accord. The reason that I didn't support it, and that wasn't so much from a science standpoint, but it was more from a more practical standpoint.
The economics.
Well, the economics, of course, were, yeah, you're right. The economics of it were true. That's a very good point. But what I meant to say is that when I heard about this climate change deal, the first question I had is, how are you going to enforce it? And nobody could answer that question. There was no enforcement mechanism. And then, of course, China and India were not included. So my point is, what's the point of this deal if China and India are not in it, Martin?
Yeah, the biggest polluters. I mean, we could shut down all our energy production plants in the United States, and probably in 2 or 3 days, we'd be back up to where we were just by China alone. It's a trickle. I thought you guys were going to talk about nuclear capabilities, threats around the world.
Well, tell us about that.
I was going to say, apparently Trump threatened to scuttle the INF treaty with Russia. And so what are your thoughts on that and or North Korea's nuclear issue? And then we'll wrap it up with your book.
Well, I've talked enough about the book, I think. Let me dive into North Korea. Most people, it's in the open literature, think the North Koreans have about 20 assembled nuclear devices and enough fissile material to do another 20. Their problem seems to be in their delivery mechanisms, ICBMs and so forth. Thanks to President Trump's initiatives with Kim Jong-il and Secretary Pompeo's ceaseless efforts to follow those up, we have had no more testing by the North Koreans for many months now. And whether or not that's going to continue is a very complex thing. I think it's going to depend in large measure to the degree to which China can defray our sanctions by supplying North Korea. And quickly on Iran, they Well, depending on whether you believe Bibi Netanyahu or the IAEA, my bet would be with Bibi that they may have some nuclear weapons already or damn close to it. And Iran has already tested nuclear delivery vehicles, ICBMs, to 1,000 miles, and the open literature says that they're pretty far along in developing an ICBM that will go to 6,000 miles. So I think those two alone are God forbid if they ever teamed up, but and more than we know they're doing. But I don't think the Soviets, in many ways, pose such a large threat as Iran and North Korea. At least we can we do have some leverage over the Soviet. Soviet Union is a very low, as you know. Their economic situation is not all that good, and we have pretty strong sanctions against them already, and we could up those. And so I tend not to worry so much about Soviets as I do Iran and North Korea. I think they're the biggest threat near term.
Yeah. Well, North Korea, we seem to be controlling that one. Iran, that's my worry too. That's my number one worry is Iran, especially now that what appears to be crumbling from within, and there's a lot of discontent within Iran. I mean, the people running Iran could get very desperate and start doing some very crazy things.
Well, let me share one
news
story that will tie this subject together and end on a perfect note for Halloween. Then,
great.
All right. All right, it's perfect. I mentioned Trump canceling the INF treaty with Russia, and Russia is making gestures they're upset with it. That NATO has just concluded the largest exercise it has had since the end of the Cold War. And they were so diligent in doing those exercises that the U.S. Marines drank all the beer in Iceland. So I think Putin should take a note that our boys are there to take names and kick butt and drink beer.
That's right. That's
I'll second that.
And to celebrate Halloween today. You forgot that one, Leslie. They're there to celebrate Halloween today as well.
Yeah,
well, Leslie,
I'm thinking that's a perfect little tidbit to definitely highlight. I think Martin's assessment is correct, and that to remind all our good listeners, if you're over legal age, please have fun tonight, drink responsibly, but drink plenty of beer and lift up your glass.
And Leslie, tell them not to drink so much they can't get out and vote Republican tomorrow. That's very important. Next week.
Next Tuesday. Yeah.
Next
but that's
week.
Okay. You can vote early probably tomorrow in many places as
early
well. So that's, yeah, you can vote early here. You can vote early in Texas. So I already did that.
Already
that's
voted.
How I voted early as well. But I want to thank you so much. I would like to propose an idea for a future show, Leslie and Martin, and that is that we do a show about climate change and this topic. It's of great interest to me, and I know the listeners as well, and it's something that I would love to do it. So you guys, why don't you plan, Leslie, let's plan something like that maybe in a few months after the election.
Yeah, that would be great. We'll let the election chaos die down and then see where the new leadership, if any, is taking us.
Yeah,
Martin, I just want to tell you a little story that Leslie and I usually, when we do these shows, we talk about obviously the political stuff before the election. But then after the election, everybody's kind of worn out. So what we do is look for topics that are not directly about the election. And one year we ended up doing a show about tango. So we can remember that, Leslie. We did that show about tango.
Would you be interested in the radiative capture strength function for fast neutrons?
If it has to do with Egypt, I'm sure Leslie would love to.
Yeah, if I could tie it to Egypt, like if I can reanimate mummies with that sort of information,
right.
then we definitely have a date.
That's right.
We'll see what Egypt is doing on that.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you, Martin, so much for joining us today. My very best of luck with the book. I've already placed an order on Amazon for my Kindle copy, so I hope to read that soon. And
right.
I want to thank you and wish you the best with the book. And as I said, we'd like to have you back.
Hey, thank you, guys,
I put a little plug
on
Facebook for your book as well. Well, I put a plug on Facebook for your book, so hopefully some friends will notice it. And Leslie, we're always so grateful that you help us with these guests, and just delighted. Now all I can say to you, Leslie, is enjoy Halloween.
Yeah, thank you. So grateful for your continued friendship. Have a safe Halloween and a very blessed All Saints Day tomorrow.
Yes,
so,
you're right.
So I'll be putting you in my prayers when
yes.
I start turning my eyes heavenward in a more spiritual reflection tomorrow.
Red, you go from Halloween to All Saints Day. That's a great transition.
Yeah.
Yep.
God bless you and
okay.
keep you. And everybody out
Thank
there, don't forget, if you haven't voted, vote red. Vote.
That's it. That's it. That's the only way to vote. Vote red. That's exactly right. Martin, thank you so much. Leslie, thank you so much.
Thank you both.
Hugs, bye.
All right, thank you so much. Thank you so much. Our good friend Leslie Eastman, and today a new friend, Martin Frick, who is a nuclear physicist. What a great title that is, and what an interesting fellow he turned out to be. I was just fascinated with everything he had to say. Well, as Martin and Leslie were saying, make sure you vote. Here in Texas, you can vote early. Other parts of the country where people listen, you can vote early as well. So please do. And vote red. Yes, vote red. That's the only way to vote. Bye-bye, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.